Some Wisconsin businesses are trying to staff up with seasonal workers to help during the holiday rush amid difficult labor times here. Other small businesses, especially some restaurants, are struggling to stay open and work through supply chain issues. We're looking at the health of businesses and the pace of economic recovery here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You've aligned to Wisconsin Economic Development Secretary Missy Hughes. Wisconsin's unemployment rate stood at 3.9% in August. Are you struggling to find work? Business owners, what questions do you have about federal and state pandemic relief? It's 800-642-1234. Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of WEDC. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Let's start perhaps with a footnote. The State Senate confirming your appointment as secretary last week. You've been in the job for about 2 years. What does the confirmation mean to you?
Yeah, it's just been 2 years on October 1st, so that's exciting. You know, the confirmation is really for me a confirmation about what my team has been working on in the last 2 years. We have been dedicated to helping communities and businesses all around Wisconsin and have deployed over $600 million worth of federal funding for relief for our businesses and our communities. So we've been working really hard, and it's nice to get that confirmation and voice of support from the legislature.
Well, here we are in the last quarter of the calendar year, heading toward a normally busy shopping season when businesses recruit many seasonal workers. How are you feeling about Wisconsin's economic recovery from the pandemic at this point?
You know, we are back to pre-pandemic levels of unemployment and labor participation rate, which means how many folks in the population are, at work and doing their jobs. So overall, we're feeling really good about how the economy is doing. You know, we still have challenges in Wisconsin that we saw come to light during the pandemic, things like access to childcare, community infrastructure like housing and broadband, and of course, the racial and economic equity challenges that we see in the state. So we've got work to do, but we're coming from a good place.
Another issue has been the labor force and the labor challenges, finding workers to fill open positions. And some Republicans have said it's the federal unemployment benefits, the extra $300 a week in pandemic jobless benefits that were an incentive for people to stay home instead of work. Do you see that there was a causation for the labor shortage we see now tied to this pandemic aid?
You know, the data is just not showing that there's a tie to the unemployment benefits and workforce availability. We had workforce challenges in Wisconsin before the pandemic, and we continue to see those challenges. You know, really, the unemployment benefits are a critical safety net for folks and also really help keep our local economies going. You can imagine if folks don't have a job and they don't have the support, they're not out buying groceries and gas and things like that in our communities. But overall, we do have workforce challenges, and we're seeing that in our restaurants and our small businesses. We're seeing a lot of innovation from those businesses to make up for their lack of workforce. But it's a challenge we continue to see.
You mentioned restaurants and the National Restaurant Association. They just surveyed thousands of restaurant operators. Vast majority are paying more for food and labor. 44% think it'll be another year before business normalizes. How do you keep restaurants and family-owned businesses open in this? How do you keep their doors open?
Well, the very first thing we need to do to keep our restaurants and our businesses open is get vaccinated. And as soon as we can continue to work on getting vaccinated and get to that critical moment of herd immunity, it's going to help our small businesses and our restaurants. And they've really borne the brunt of the pandemic. So we deserve it, or they deserve, our getting vaccinated and making sure we're taking care of ourselves from a public health standpoint so we can have an economic health that will continue to recover.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Missy Hughes, who is Secretary and CEO of WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, as we're discussing the state of the economic recovery, what she sees, and what you see in your community in terms of businesses. Are they open? Are they struggling? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Saul in Stevens Point with a question. Hi, Saul. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering why WEDC, in fact, anybody in state government, has not been actively involved in getting a proposal together for Foxconn to build electric vehicles in Wisconsin. They've made many public announcements and stuff, and as far as I can tell, including the engineering departments at Madison, nothing.
Saul, thank you for that. Of course, the news broke last week that Foxconn had signed a $230 million deal with an Ohio assembly plant. Secretary Hughes, what can you say there?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is probably not going to be satisfying to Saul, which is, you know, when we have conversations with companies about their decisions to expand their businesses or not, we keep those conversations between us and the company so that they have the full field of operation and they're able to make their decisions. Obviously, at WEDC, we are talking to Foxconn all the time. They're a partner of ours, and we work with them. I will say, you know, I know there's anxiousness to bring electric vehicle production to any state and, you know, particularly to Wisconsin. But I've had the chance recently to talk with some of our companies, you know, companies like Oshkosh Trucking or Aaron's and Company, Milwaukee Tool, who are doing amazing things when it comes to electrification. And we have a ton going on in Wisconsin around the new economy of, you know, based in renewables and electrification. I'm so excited about it. And I think we need to recognize that in Wisconsin, we have amazing engineering happening. We're leading in many different ways around this.
Well, circling back to Foxconn for a moment, the village of Mount Pleasant has invested millions of dollars on its infrastructure and land to support Foxconn's plans. Is Foxconn planning to invest more in its Mount Pleasant facilities?
You know, Foxconn has continued to invest. They've invested over, I think, $200 million in the last year or 2 years in that facility. And so they continue to invest, and we continue to work with the locals to make sure that we're doing everything we can to attract businesses to that area to help support them in, yeah, the investment that they made in reliance on Foxconn coming.
And Racine County Economic Development Corporation reported over the summer seeing an uptick in lending, uptick in closing of projects. Are you doing anything unique for this corridor between Kenosha and Racine County in economic development, since it was meant to be all about Foxconn? So much infrastructure was poured into that area.
Well, it's important to keep in mind what's happening in that corridor is amazing. It's on fire. We've seen, you know, the building of the Haribo facility. They're going to start making gummy bears here in the next few months. And it's the largest North American confectionery facility. We've seen Amazon come in there, Uline. There's just amazing companies down there. So there's a lot happening, and it really shows the benefit of investing in infrastructure. The work that was done on the I-94 corridor is really coming through and showing in economic development in that area.
Let's bring in Jerry now, who's a restaurant owner with 500 employees. Jerry, hi. What is the situation like for you?
It's stressful for everybody involved in the restaurant industry right now. I can tell you that. Workers, owners, food suppliers, there's just a lot of stress going on. And when your guest said, if everybody just got vaccinated, that would be the biggest help. I mean, I just felt this wave of relief go over me because, yes, that would make a huge difference for everybody. I mean, we have to protect our workers that are unvaccinated. And sometimes that means 3 weeks that they have to be quarantined if their kid comes back. And, you know, so it's we're already short-staffed, and then, you know, we have the burden of protecting our staff.
Jerry, what do you do in terms of staffing? I mean, when the staff have to quarantine due to an exposure, are they still getting paid?
It all depends on the government programs out there, you know.
Secretary Hughes, what can you say here?
I just want to say thanks to Jerry. And, you know, it must be so hard to have to ride these waves of fear of customers coming in and dealing with workers. And that's why I think we all need to be thinking about our restaurants and our small business owners all the time. We need to be empathetic. We need to be generous. If time, you know, it takes a little longer to get served your food. But the restaurant owners in particular have just really, really been subject to so many different variables. And it's just really difficult. And that's why, first and foremost, as Jerry said, we need to get vaccinated.
Wisconsin's head of economic development, Missy Hughes, is with us on economic growth and job creation as Wisconsin's unemployment rate approaches pre-pandemic levels. Has your small business received a federal grant to help in these times? What did that money enable you to do? Are you unemployed, underemployed, or trying to find work that best suits your skills in Wisconsin? What barriers do you find to entering the labor market and staying employed? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Secretary Missy Hughes here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the road to recovery for Wisconsin business and industry on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You've aligned to WEDC Secretary Missy Hughes as we discuss the challenges around hiring, around supply chain disruptions, capital investments, and more. We heard Waukesha-based energy firm Generac has announced it's adding hundreds of jobs, while Apple supplier Foxconn is looking elsewhere. It agreed to buy a former GM plant in Ohio. What economic development and business news is on your mind? Join in 800-642-1234. CEO Missy Hughes of WEDC with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's look at these workforce innovation grants. Nonprofits or government agencies can receive up to $10 million to help meet job needs. What type of projects do you hope to see funded?
Well, I want to add that businesses can also participate in those grants. What we're really looking for is for regions or communities to come together and say, you know, if we have this one thing solved, whether it's transportation or childcare, we could really move the dial on our workforce challenges. And we're really excited about the conversations that we see happening around the state and really trying to prioritize and find local solutions for these workforce challenges.
Yeah, what would be examples of groundbreaking, long-term local solutions that would help solve these workforce challenges?
Well, I'll take transportation as an example. What we're really seeing is this quote-unquote last mile of transportation. We're seeing restaurant owners have to go and pick up their workers from, you know, a mile or two away where they get dropped off by public transportation. We're seeing farmers have to go and, you know, pick up a group of workers in order to get them out into the fields or into the milk house. And so thinking about how you might solve that issue is really going to change the game for business owners in that area and get them access to that workforce.
You mentioned childcare as well, a pervasive issue across all communities, large and small. How would a grant like this offer a solution to that persistent childcare crisis?
Well, you can imagine an area in Wisconsin that's a so-called childcare desert, right? They don't have enough access to childcare. You can imagine that they take these dollars and build childcare, and then the businesses commit to purchasing slots in those childcare facilities for their workers. And that way, the childcare facility has a stable income, the business has access to childcare for their workers, and the overall ability to make sure we're taking care of those kids in that area is solved.
You mentioned $600 million in federal funding trying to boost the economy, help businesses. And we've talked with Republican lawmakers about bills that would direct more funding for rural economic projects. What is WEDC doing to ensure equitable use of dollars for rural communities?
So we have an office called the Office of Rural Prosperity, and the goal right now of that office is to make sure we're supporting communities in accessing these dollars. The place where we find ourselves right now is with a huge amount of resources, but accessing those can be challenging, especially for communities that don't have a grant writer or that are already stressed because of everything we've been going through. And so the Office of Rural Prosperity at WEDC is ready to help communities access those dollars and navigate the state government. And if a community is listening and they want to know about that, they can find out about it at WEDC.org.
What kind of resources would help these much smaller communities that don't have the human power, if you will, to write these grants and get these grants in?
Well, we've been able to access federal resources to help us have grant writers on staff.
Okay.
And to help the communities do that. So we've got actual people who are ready to help.
We're talking with Missy Hughes, Secretary and CEO of WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We're discussing pandemic recovery, what businesses in Wisconsin are facing now, with your challenges as well in the economy at 800-642-1234. Ivan is joining us from Madison. Hi, Ivan. Go ahead.
Good morning, Secretary. I want to say thank you. I'm Hispanic, and let me tell you, all the help that your office have been doing in the last year, let me tell you something, it's helping a lot of people. We are grateful. The challenge is sometimes it's hard for people to, you know, apply for grants, but let me tell you something, that makes a big difference. Thank you.
Oh, Ivan, very quickly, I know that you found a significant difference for housing. What impact have you seen in housing?
In housing, I don't know exactly because I'm more in, and I'm a small business owner.
So oh, okay. Much, I'm sorry. What type of small business, may I ask? Yeah, go ahead. What type of small business?
I do health insurance and health benefits, and that's pretty much what I do.
Yeah. And how have the grants impacted your business?
Well, a lot. It allows us to invest in new software, in new equipment, hire more people. That's really meaningful.
Yeah. Ivan, thank you for that. Secretary Hughes, anything you would like to add there?
I just appreciate Ivan's comments. And, you know, what we've tried to do is make these dollars as easy to access as possible. And we've given real flexibility to the business owners to be able to use it for inventory, or as Ivan said, software or payroll. You know, we felt that the business owners are the smartest ones to know how to spend those dollars, and they'll do it wisely.
Let's turn to Africa. WEDC planning to a trade visit to Africa in December with the goal of increasing our state's exports. What opportunities could there be for Wisconsin businesses in Africa?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that this is going to be a virtual trade mission, which is something we've learned how to do in the last 18 months, and we're really excited about it because it offers a tremendous amount of flexibility. This is our first trade mission to Africa, which, of course, is a whole continent, but we really see it as one of the largest growing markets in the world, and so we want to help our businesses access it. Trek Bicycles has already been, you know, selling bikes in Africa for many years, so we're learning from them. And then there are businesses, like a particular business that can set up gas stations really quickly, and also, you know, those can be water stations. So businesses like that have opportunities in Africa, and we want to help them access it.
What might these meetings be like? What leaders would you be meeting with virtually?
So what we do with our trade missions is connect me to government leaders, or we connect our businesses to other businesses, and they're able to have conversations about how to sell their products, how to distribute their products. And we do this in, you know, we're going to do it in Africa, but we do this in Germany and in China and Canada. We do this all over the world, helping our businesses access international markets.
What have those meetings done? Have they been fruitful for Wisconsin?
Well, there's two things that they've done. One, it helps our businesses actually, you know, sell more products, which is fantastic. But it also helps us continue to think globally and to recognize that our economy is part of a global economy. And how do we approach that and make sure that we're being the best we can to be able to access those markets?
We only have a few seconds left, but I just want to ask you, Secretary, what is the toughest challenge right now at this state in the pandemic? What are you grappling with on a day-to-day basis?
You know, in Wisconsin, always, I think the toughest challenge is that we have real economic disparities, and we've got communities that have been subject to disinvestment for a long time. And so it's incumbent on all of us to think about how to lift up those communities and make sure that we're investing in them so that we can all succeed.
Secretary Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Coming up, WPR's regional bureaus bring us conversations with a Green Bay Packers superfan and Packers Hall of Famer Mark Tauscher. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. The Green Bay Packers have spent the last 100 years building relationships with fans that cut across generations and geographical boundaries. It is the subject of a production from WPR's regional bureaus called The People and Their Packers. And later in the morning show, we'll hear from superfan Dave Lucero on moving his fandom cross-country from Southern California all the way to Titletown. But first, former Packers offensive tackle Mark Tauscher is a lifelong Wisconsinite, a former Wisconsin Badger, and in the Packers Hall of Fame. He hosts the daily radio show and podcast called Wildy and Tausch, and he talked with WPR's Shireen Seawert and Ezra Wall. Here's Ezra.
Did you grow up a Packers fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can remember. We grew up on a dairy farm right in Millidore, Wisconsin, which is up in Wood County. And, you know, we would obviously have chores to do and stuff, but it was always, we would find time either to listen to it on the radio with Max McGee and Jim Irwin. You know, unfortunately, most of my childhood, the Packers weren't very good, but I loved it. And we would, you know, we'd go back and after the game, we'd get done with our chores, and the Schmitz, which are our neighbors, had a bunch of kids. We'd always get together and play the game, whether it was Lynn Dickey or Donnie Mikowski or Randy Wright, whoever was quarterbacking, you know, we'd go and try to emulate that, James Lofton. And so our Sundays, we would try to carve out and say, we want to either watch or listen to whatever the Packers are doing. And you know, typically our mood would be better depending on, you know, whether or not Green Bay found a way to win.
So you said you were in the backyard emulating Lynn Dickey and Don Mikowski and all those guys. Obviously, you played football on the college level before going to the NFL. When did you start to recognize that you had some skills?
You know what? It's a funny story, but I went through and I got down to Wisconsin by playing basketball at Auburndale. Our team made the state championship, and then, you know, one of the guys came to recruit me. I was going to go play football at UW Stevens Point. And, you know, had that happened, who knows? But I did not have pro aspirations. I just, that was never even thought about. And until really my fifth year at Wisconsin, I had been a backup. I backed up, our current athletic director, Chris McIntosh. And I just was going to get my degree from a great university and move on. And when I finally got my opportunity to go play, some scouts came in, and I remember it was early afternoon in October of probably 1999, which was my fifth year. My offensive line coach, Jim Huber, just came to me and said, hey, just want to let you know there's some NFL scouts looking at you, and I think you can do it. I think you should give it a shot. And that was really the first time on my radar that, hey, this might be an opportunity for me to have a career in, you know, to play in the NFL, which, you know, we all dreamt about that when we're throwing the ball in the backyard, but the reality is that wasn't, you know, I didn't think there was much of a chance of it. And then all of a sudden that day, early in that season, my senior year, that came in, and I just wanted to make sure I was going to do everything I could to try and fulfill that dream that I didn't even realize was a potential opportunity for me.
Scouts are looking at you. You know, draft day is approaching, and it looks like, you know, your number could get called. And then it does, and it's the hometown team who's coming knocking on your door. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was the whole process is crazy, you know, where you finish up. We're fortunate, you know, Ron Dayne wins the Heisman. We go out and we win a Rose Bowl. And from then it was just, I got invited to the Shrine Bowl. I got invited to go over to Hawaii and play in the Hula Bowl. Then you have the combine, and you go through your workouts, and you don't really know what's going to happen. And, you know, for me, it was, I just wanted to get drafted. I would obviously love the Green Bay Packers. Never thought about that. It was try to get drafted as soon as you can. And I thought I was going to be drafted by the Detroit Lions. One of their coaches called me on this back then, the draft was Saturday, Sunday. And I had a call early on Sunday morning that the fifth round I was going to get picked by the Lions. And fortunately now I was not. And the sixth round, I'm not hearing anything. I'm starting to kind of freak out a little bit. And then, you know, luckily the Packers called me with one of their picks in the seventh round and said, we're going to select you. And at that point I was, let's go. 2 days later, I'm driving up to minicamp where I'm seeing Farvin, Frank Winters, and, you know, a bunch of guys that I had been sitting here watching win a Super Bowl 4 or 5 years earlier. And here I am now in that locker room. It was really a crazy, you know, stretch of time for me.
I mean, in a way, talk about the ultimate fan experience, that had to be it. And yet you've got to buckle down and get a job to do. What's it like to make that transition from kind of fanboying on these guys to all of a sudden, you know, you're part of that line that's like protecting Brett Favre from, you know, what could be looming disaster?
Yeah, the reality hits you pretty quick. I think you walk in and you're kind of, you know, I remember kind of a deer in the headlights. First time I meet Frankie, and then obviously you meet Brett Favre, who's at that point, I think, a 2 or 3 time MVP. And you got a little fanboyish to you. And then all of a sudden you're out there, you're trying to block Bonnie Holiday and Santana Dotson. And, you know, the focus goes quick. Like, all right, this is awesome to, I better get my stuff together. This is going to be a really short trip.
You know, this is true across the country and across the world, but especially fans here in Wisconsin. And that's primarily what we're talking about today, is that fan relationship between the people and their Packers. That can get pretty intense. You're talking about people who paint their houses and their cars and get tattoos and all that kind of stuff. What's it like as a player? How much of that sort of fan intensity are players aware of in that locker room?
Oh, you're aware of it. And I think, you know, being the smallest NFL town, I think you realize it's all about football, and the guys that aren't from the state of Wisconsin understand it quickly. It's the only team that is owned by the fans. So you embrace that part of it. And I think, you know, the idea that thousands of people would come to watch practice, kind of mind blowing, because, you know, you practice at Camp Randall, and that was never the case. It amazes you at first, and then it just becomes normal that, hey, people really care, because I think it really does come back to, it's their football team too. And people really look at it and say they're invested literally and figuratively in the outcomes and how this team does. And I think people look at that as being pretty cool.
You hit the nail on the head there when you talk about people being invested, because they literally spend hundreds of dollars of their own money to buy a piece of stock that is of absolutely no financial value.
And you know what? And it's not even, I think initially you think, why would you do that? And then once you see it and you're like, well, why wouldn't you do it? I think from a spiritual and just from a emotional standpoint, I think it's a great move, because people are all in and they really are interested in what is, you know, what this football team does. And that's why you don't see people jumping on and off bandwagons as much, because people are invested.
So we're talking all about the fan experience today, the Green Bay Packer fan experience especially. What has that interaction been like for you? Can you think of an example of something that really impacted you or was kind of out there crazy, or some experience with a fan interaction?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember my first game. I didn't know where to park. And I just remember trying to figure out, all right, I don't know. We were at St. Norbert's in the dorms, and we were getting, it was a preseason game. And I'm trying to maneuver into the parking lot because I, you know, didn't pay attention when they gave us the passes where we go. So I ended up parking in the far end. And I remember Packer fans kind of helping me figure out how to get from point A to point B so I could go play. They recognized me. And, you know, it's always cool now going back. I don't see a ton of 65 jerseys with Tauscher on the back of them. But whenever I do, I want to make sure I stop and say thank you and hello. And coolest part is, and I think people from out of state will always tell you, you come to a game and you park your car in somebody's lawn, you're going to get offered a beer. You're going to get offered to use the bathroom. You're going to get offered a brat. And I think that's still, I think to me, everything about Wisconsin sports fans, we want to go out and compete and win, but we want to have a great time while we're doing it. And the fact that it's, whether it's Philadelphia fans or Giants fans, whoever it is, we want everybody to have a good time, but we want to win. And we want to do it with you having a good time.
Mark Tauscher is a former Wisconsin Badger, a former Green Bay Packer, the pride of Auburndale, and of course, a talk show host and sports commentator. Mark, thank you so much for your time today, and thanks for being on our show.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
And that was Ezra Wall. This is a WPR production called The People and Their Packers. And it continues as we hear from superfan Dave Lucero explaining what made him love the franchise all the way out in Southern California. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Stay with us on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So imagine growing up a football fan in Southern California only to have your favorite team move out of town. What do you do then? Well, if you're Dave Lucero, you turn to the Green Bay Packers, of course. Lucero lives in Green Bay now, but he tells WPR's Shireen Seward and Ezra Wall more about how he became a fan of the Green Bay Packers.
I was a fan of the Raiders. I'm a big Southern California sports guy. So the local teams, which was at the time, the Dodgers, of course, the Lakers. I was a big fan of the Raiders, but I was growing up as a kid rooting on the Raiders. But in the summer of 1994, the Raiders and the Los Angeles Rams at the time both picked up that summer and left. And so as a kid with no football team to root for, I was a little bit jaded about that whole experience, thinking that an NFL franchise could just get up and leave. So that next fall, I tuned in to watch football like ordinarily would, without a single team in mind, just watching football every Sunday. But I noticed that I gravitated to Brett Favre and the way he played with the Packers and the way he approached the game and the fun and the energy and the excitement he brought to the game. And I was hooked. Every Sunday I tuned in and watch them play. And of course they were at a time when they were really good, and Brett was winning MVP awards year after year, and found out that they were smallest market team with the most championships. And after that I was just hooked. So I've been a fan since 1994.
So you talked about feeling like your team could just get up and leave and abandon you almost in that sense. Yeah. What was it like to know that you finally found a team, the only team in the NFL that literally can't do that?
Right. Literally. Coincidentally, not only am I a fan, I'm a shareholder. And this year I got my season tickets. I'm very fortunate about that. So I experienced my first game last night in my new seat. So I'm excited about that. But just the whole point of rooting and being a fan of anything in life, I feel like there's that loyalty and that bond that comes with rooting for a team that you're passionate about. And if a team can pick up and leave its fan base, I just told me that, maybe it was time to look elsewhere. And the second I watched, the Packers play and did a little bit of research about the history and about, the community. And I was just hooked. And like I said, I've been a fan ever since. And they'll break your heart, don't get me wrong, but they'll never leave you. So that's really important.
I'm really interested in this group, the Packer backers in California, 12,000 people. What is it about the Packers that touches people from as far away as Southern California?
We didn't have football in Southern California for 25 years from the time that the Rams and Raiders left until, you know, eventually the Rams coming back and the Chargers coming to the area. I think a lot of people are hungry for football and are passionate about football in the area. And with no professional team, it's easy to see a team like the Packers were successful, maybe not winning the championship every year, but successful, a competitive team, puts a great product on the floor. And when you have iconic quarterbacks like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, it's easy to root for them. So just being out west, I knew there was a tremendous fan base. What inspired me was the fact that whenever we would go to games, to Packer games, especially as visitors, we would be astonished by the number of California residents that were there cheering on the team and, you know, making conversation with fans. Finding out they were from Southern California, I thought, you know what, I need to bring people together. I need to get people together to cheer on the team, get together to make friendships, to meet different Packer fans. And so the idea started in 2012, and now even though I'm 2,000 miles away, I set up meetup watch spots all over Southern California, from San Diego all the way up to Los Angeles and beyond. We have about 12 to 13 watch spots that we organize meetups on game days where fans come together. We also do events like we did yesterday. We were at Lambeau Field, probably about 75 to 100 of us from Southern California got together over the weekend, had a meetup, and then watched the game and cheered on the team. We have an event scheduled with group tickets for the San Francisco game, group tickets for the Cincinnati game. So it's really just about getting together and cheering on the team. But to answer your question, just Los Angeles was a hotbed for passionate fans, but without football, it was easy to root for the Packers when they were so successful and still successful today.
You're a season ticket holder in Green Bay, along with being a shareholder. But I'm jealous of your status as a season ticket holder. And B, how long did you have to wait on that waiting list?
Fortunately for me, I put my name on both lists for the bowl. Of course, I'm like number 80,000 out of 144,000. So the odds of me ever getting those is probably slim to none. But I put in for the Premier Club seats. And so I've been waiting 14 years for those tickets, and obviously my name was drawn, and I was super ecstatic about that, just to be able to know that I have my own seats week after week. And I'm very fortunate to have great friends and from Wisconsin that have been helping me. I haven't missed a home game since 2010, helping me with tickets, but it's nice to say that I'm a shareholder and a season ticket holder and not have to worry about asking anyone for tickets.
14 years, was it worth the wait?
Of course, walking through last night, I will say this about being a Premier Club seat holder. It's a little bit different environment. You think of going to a stadium and, you know, having stadium food and beer. You're thinking of brats and you're thinking of nachos and fries and that sort of thing. I think last night, my wife and I had a steak sandwich. She had a chicken teriyaki noodle bowl. And we had red velvet cake and we had ice cream at halftime. So it was just a completely different environment. But it was completely awesome having to be able to experience that's pretty unique.
That famous Green Bay red velvet cake, huh?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It was really good, though. I can't lie.
Are you a big tailgater?
We are. I am, yes. And a unique story, too. When I first moved to Wisconsin, I've been here since 2008. My job, I was fortunate to get a promotion. And in 2013, I moved to the city of Green Bay. And I lived a block away on Blue Ridge Drive, just behind where Titletown now resides. So we would tailgate every Sunday and then walk a block to the games. House would be full. Friends from all over California would come to visit. And now they still do, but it's a little different. We decided to upgrade our house a little bit. Wife wanted a little bit of a break from the craziness of Sunday at Lambeau Field. And now, of course, Titletown's such an awesome, amazing experience and crazy busy all the time that we thought it was best to get a house elsewhere. So I'm about 7 minutes away from Lambeau Field now. But yes, definitely a big tailgater.
What's that? What's game day fare at a SoCal Packer Backers tailgate party?
I kind of do the typical California thing. We do drink Spotted Cow, but we don't traditionally do that since friends are coming. I'll have Mexican beers. I do have a lot of Corona in the cooler, ready for our guests to. Drink those, and then coincidentally I will put Heineken in a different cooler, and I know the two are different, but I like the green and gold. We also do tacos. I'll make carne asada. We'll marinate it the night before, and we'll make tacos for everyone participating or coming to the house. They can also take that carne asada and make nachos out of it, make burritos out of it. We make homemade salsa, just the full Mexican food, but we tend to turn it into a tailgate party, but with Mexican food.
I love that you color code the beer coolers.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's weird when I said Corona, but then I have to be honest. Yes, we do occasionally do Stella, but mostly it's usually Corona and Heineken.
I was expecting we do brunch and sauerkraut. No, man, yeah. Carne asada, green and gold beer.
Awesome.
Oh, man.
There's so many options when you do the carne asada. Like I said, you could do the burritos, the nachos, and the tacos. And the best part about it is it's even better after beer and after the game. It's even better when you warm it up because, you know, after drinking during the game, you need a little bit of pick me up. So it's good to go.
Yeah.
Well, plus it's always better after the Packers win, right?
Yeah, of course, everything's better after a Packers win. So
can you compare the football fan experience between Southern California, like back when the Raiders were there, and what it's like at Lambeau? How different are those experiences?
There really is no comparison. Obviously I'm a big fan. My closest experience would be to like the Dodgers because it took a long time for the Dodgers to win a World Series, but the fan base is crazy incredible in Los Angeles. They've been the biggest draw throughout Major League Baseball for a number of years, even when they haven't won in over 32 years. But as far as the fandom, the unique experience, the legacy, the history, all of those things, there's just really no experience. Los Angeles is one thing, but California has so many sports teams, and there actually is a tremendous divide between Southern California sports and Northern California sports with the Giants and the Dodgers and the Rams and the 49ers and those types of things. So to answer your question, there's nothing like it. Wisconsin has the Packers. I mean, if you're a Packer fan, then everybody has the Packers, and there's nothing else. And like I said, in California, many teams to root for, so it doesn't compare to what the Packers and their fans bring every Sunday, and intensity and the loyalty to that team.
Dave Lucero is a resident of Green Bay, but before that, a resident of Southern California, and one of the leaders and organizers behind the SoCal Packer Backers, and we're pleased to have had him on the show today. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. I appreciate it. You guys, I really do appreciate it. Thanks for letting me showcase my fandom. It means a lot, and I'm really ecstatic about it.
And you can hear from Dave Lucero, Mark Tauscher, many more on the WPR collaboration called The People and Their Packers. Those were WPR's regional hosts, Shireen Seward and Ezra Wall, in conversation. Just ahead, it's the next edition of our Ask a Contractor series, and we're sealing up our space as we get tips and advice to save time and money for winterizing homes. What temp do you set your thermostat at in winter? How often do you replace your furnace filter? Do you know when? Join in 800-642-1234 for the Ask a Contractor HVAC Expert. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.